welcome to the Tom and Curly Show. I'm, of course, Tom Tangney, and John's away. Yes, again, John's away, but again, only for one day. And he's away on one of his biggest auction gigs ever. He's working tonight's pre-Grammy jam in L.A. with a bunch of Grammy nominees. It's all in honor of Dolly Parton for some reason. And John's going to be running the show, so congratulations to John. I'm sure he'll do a bang-up job. So then that raises the great question of the day. Who do we have on the guest host carousel this fine Friday morn?
I don't know what they have to say. It makes no difference anyway. Whatever it is, I'm against it. No matter what it is or who commenced it, I'm against it.
That's right. The great Jason Rance of KTTH.
Hello. I think you were there for this original recording,
correct? Yes, indeed. I had this brilliant idea of, oh my God, I got to pick Jason's walk-on music. And I came up with that in honor of your love of movies, your love of Groucho Marx, and of course, the attitude expressed in, I'm against it. If you don't know Jason, I don't know why you don't. He's been around here, it seems like, forever. And he has his show on
KTTH. Since the dude has literally been here forever. Yes, I'm on KTTH from 3 to 6
that's
p.m.
right.
weekday afternoon.
You used to have the morning show, yep. Now you have the afternoon show. Congratulations to all that. Jason and I, if you don't know Jason, we have polar opposite political takes. But we sort of bond on our shared love of movies, and I think it's always fun.
Although that's starting to shaky ground right there.
Yeah, well, I know.
That is
true. And that makes the relationship more interesting. How's that? Well, anyway, thanks for doing this, Jason. I really appreciate it.
They're paying me. I'm going to volunteer my time.
I know, but you're up early. I appreciate that, now that you don't have to be up so early. Anyway, so we've got the Jeff Bezos scandal, of course, in the news. We've got a Supreme Court ruling regarding abortion. And a Ride the Ducks verdict to get into. But first, we got to talk about snow. Now, there has been a cut that we've been playing all morning. We just heard it on Ursula's News. But the problem is, it seems too outlandish to be believed. So I'm just going to play it again in case you've missed it. This is Rodney Maxey with SDOT warning that this might be the biggest storm a lot of people have seen in a very long time. Now, let's listen carefully to what he says.
This is potentially the largest storm to come to Seattle in the last 25 to 50 years. When that happens during the commute, many folks find that they cannot navigate the hills and they start to abandon their vehicles right in the middle of the main arterials and highways.
Anyway, I think
I have so much to say about that one clip.
We need to take this up short. 25 to 50 years. I mean, this was 10, 11 years ago when we had the massive abandonment of vehicles on I-5 because the snow was so bad. I just hadn't heard that from any of the weathermen. So I think I don't want to say those are scare tactics, but
it's totally a scare tactic.
It's completely out of proportion to what we're expecting.
Yes.
He might be right come Monday morning.
Well,
we may say good for Rodney.
There better be a total standstill in all of Western Washington based on the way they're talking about this snowstorm. This whole idea that this could be the worst.
Yes.
Every storm could be the worst that we've ever seen. I think what he's really doing there, he's setting expectations, which is, let's read between the lines. We're not, as a city, going to be able to handle any major disruption that's caused by snow, so we're just putting that out there now. We can have a little dusting of snow, and as we know, the city tends to just come to a standstill, right?
Okay. Well,
At least in the Seattle area, don't you start exaggerating. But that's true. I mean, we get
still,
a little dusting, and then everyone doesn't know what to do. They freak out. And we generally don't get the response that some people expect to get from SDOT and others, whether or not that's fair.
Okay.
But we generally don't get that.
Here we got Jeremy Ferguson with King County Road saying they're trying to do their best to be prepared.
We've been making great progress on our Category 1 snow routes, which are the primary routes that help get people to the services that they need. Unfortunately, it's difficult to get out to our Category 2 and 3 roads because we have a lot of packed snow and ice on the roadways. So I would echo Rodney's comments. If you don't need to go out, please stay home and be safe.
Now, conveniently, this is happening on the cusp of a weekend. I mean, it may start, you know, by noon today.
It's already starting now in some places. They're starting to get early signs of snow.
Oh, there you are.
Snowpocalypse-mageddon is about to happen. But to his point, you know, 15% of county roads are actually cleared by these plows. So that's part of the reason why they are sounding the alarm is they're not going to touch most anywhere that people might drive on a regular basis outside of the main roads and arterials.
You know, in some ways, they say, oh, this is terrible because it's a storm upon a storm upon a storm. However, it did kind of give us a dry run because what happened on Sunday that hit us on Monday isn't predicted, at least, to have been as big as this one coming up. And so maybe we've got a driver and we know what routes work and what routes don't. And so maybe that's good. But this is the most concerning. It's not so much tonight's snowstorm, but what we have in store for us for the rest of the week.
It looks like the gap between this storm and subsequent storms looks smaller. So, yeah, I would anticipate that this snow that comes down is going to pile on top of that. And then, yeah, it's going to stick around.
So that's a Reed
Walcott. Sounds like we're all just going to die.
With the National Weather Service. Well, no, the thing is,
do go overboard. I think part of this, though, is a reaction to underselling, I think, the snow last week. Because as I recall.
First time around, yeah.
Right. As I recall last week, we're going to get maybe a little light dusting. And then on Monday morning, everyone woke up and was like, oh, this is nothing of what you told us was going to happen. And so I wonder if some of this is overkill, but at the same time, you do have to prepare for the worst, and I don't think anyone is going to be too upset getting to leave school a little bit early, getting to leave work a little bit early, just in case it gets bad, because let's say it doesn't get bad. Okay, you missed out a few hours of work. You'll be fine.
And already, I mean, and the thing is, 4 to 8 inches, even if it snows 8 inches everywhere, that's not the biggest in 25 to 50 years.
I've seen the photos, and they're available at mynorthwest.com if you want to check them out, of the run on grocery stores where you've got shelves completely barren.
I haven't done a damn thing, and I feel like, oh, I missed my chance. Am I going to die?
If I need to, I am prepared to live off of the sauerkraut and mustard that I have in my fridge, and that's all I have over the course of the next few days.
Are you German?
This is all I have. I ate the hot dogs, the sausages. I had that for breakfast the other day.
Oh, that's are you that's too funny.
But you're not prepared, right?
No, but the thing is, I mean, I live in a home, and so we'll eat whatever we have available. It's not like we're in a bunker someplace. So
I'd be concerned if I were you.
Get by.
Well,
believe me, I'm out of here
at
noon. When I'm done at noon, I'm getting to the bus.
If there's just a little bit of ice, you're not stable yet.
I know. I am very careful. In fact, I do have another physical therapy appointment tonight at 3:30 or this afternoon at 3:30. I'm assuming that I can get there. But I explained to my PT. This is getting a little too personal, perhaps. But the last 3 days, I felt sore because of my injured leg. And I'm so concerned about slipping and falling. Mm-hmm. And so my legs are tense for like 3 solid days. I'm getting a workout just walking around. But
walking with you the other day, I can say
that's right.
You should definitely be concerned about your well-being because the truth is, if this gets bad, half of this show is done. You're going to slip and fall. You're out. No. Producer Jacob, if the power goes out, he's going to be cut out of his apartment. He's going to freeze to death in the alleyway around the corner. This is going to be bad.
Okay. Now who's being alarmist? But anyway, it is something we need to be prepared for, and I can't wait for it to happen, actually.
You say seconds after saying you personally are not prepared.
Yes. I'm personally not prepared, but I know that my entire house is going to be prepared
I have street smarts. I'm going to survive.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, in fact, I'm going to do a movie review of somebody who has great street smarts in the slums of Beirut. Can't wait for that either,
I
bet.
Sounds like a blockbuster film this week.
And it's nominated for an Academy Award. Go figure.
People are going to bear the snow to get to that.
I think we've addressed the issue of snow. Everybody knows what they should do, and then how many of us are actually doing it, we'll have to see. But, one other thing on the snow that kind of surprised me. We've been playing a clip. Somebody is suggesting that whatever you do, don't abandon your car. Cars, just stay in your car because a tow truck will come and rescue you. I said,
that's definitely not.
No,
happening.
That can't be right. There's not enough. If there were like 100 cars abandoned, I think a decade ago, we don't have that many tow truck availabilities.
If your car happens to be in a spot where there's no parking allowed after 3 o'clock, stay there because they will rescue
they will
you. They'll give you a ticket.
Oh, there's
as well.
A good. I like that idea. Okay, so now that we've addressed probably the only real news story locally that anybody cares about is how is the snow going to impact me. I want to switch to a big national issue. It's a decision by the Supreme Court that is being studied, tea leaf by tea leaf to see what the significance of it is. And that's this decision to allow for a stay of a Louisiana rule that says if you are going to perform an abortion, you have to have hospital access rights or you're not allowed to do it, which would just about eliminate 99% of the abortion clinics in Louisiana.
There's only three.
There are only three
abortion clinics in the state of Louisiana.
Now, yes, and right now it may be down to one or two admitting, and they say that an unconstitutional burden. And yesterday, so the reason we're all, obviously, the reason we're all interested in this kind of ruling is because now that we have two Trump appointees, and after all, remember, he said that he wanted pro-lifers and the ability to overturn Roe versus Wade. We don't know if that'll happen. That's way down the line. But this is the first time we actually can see a Trump court or a court constituted by both Kavanaugh and Gorsuch
court.
To see and a full court, yes, since Antonin Scalia's death and the Republicans' blocking of Merrick Garland. But still, we're looking at it. And the ruling was, if you're looking at just in terms of pro-choice versus pro-life, it went the pro-choice weight on a kind of preliminary vote. It was a 5-4 vote to allow for the stay, and then there is a good chance, there's a good hunch that it'll eventually come up for the whole full court. And just because it went 5-4 doesn't mean it won't go 5-4 the other way. It all depends on Justice Roberts, and that's what I want to talk with you about. So go ahead and explain why you think that it'll actually flip and go for the pro-life side when it finally comes to a head, and then why there's some discussion that it might not.
Without getting too much into the weeds, this
too
law
late.
Is almost identical to a law in Texas that was deemed unconstitutional. Now, when we said, you know, part of the reason why this is so important, it's a full court, is the Texas law was deemed unconstitutional in a court where Antonin Scalia had already been, who'd been dead for a few months at that point. And Gorsuch.
4-4. It was eight.
Gorsuch wasn't on the court to deliver.
Yes.
Now, back at that time, Chief Justice Roberts sided with Texas on this law. So there's no real reason to believe that all of a sudden he's going to shift his thinking. So if this were to get in front of them, the thinking would be that it would be 5-4 in favor of Louisiana. Now, some people like you are looking at this and said, well, Roberts sided with the liberal justices in permitting this stay so Louisiana wouldn't have to go through with it, which is true, but they don't say why they chose to do that.
Yes, that's the
problem. My guess would be Justice Roberts didn't think it would be fair to the state of Louisiana, as this is pending, to see whether or not this law is constitutional or not, to simply stop the process in its place, because that means people who are going through an abortion now or had appointments—
still proceed.
Yeah, I could foresee him arguing, well, it's unfair for them to have to change their issue right now because we may end up saying that it is unconstitutional, and then that woman may not be able to be up for an abortion at that
point. Right. Okay. And the reason, and it's not my opinion, it's a guess at this point. If he does indeed, by the way, the distinction between Louisiana and Texas. In Texas, the Louisiana argument in favor of their law, as opposed to Texas, which is the law of the land until it's overturned, was that we're not like Texas. That in Texas, you had to drive like 1,000 miles to get to the nearest one.
There was a substantial travel.
Yes, and in Louisiana, it's not. So there is a distinction that they were trying to make from Texas. So it might not be easily transferable one vote to another. However, I do think that you're right that if you look at the way he ruled in Texas, that should play over into Louisiana. The difference, though, is, and this is what I don't know if it's a liberal attempt, but it's a sort of an analytical attempt of the Supreme Court that says that when you become the swing vote, you're very conscious of that. And he is considered a real institutionalist. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that drove John Curley crazy about John Roberts, was that when he sided in to save Obamacare, his sort of justification of it was that maybe there's this philosophical balance and he did not want to be tipping one way or the other too much because after all, it was a congressional decision. And so he's now seen as, since Anthony Kennedy is no longer with us, on the court, that the key here is that he might see himself as a fulcrum. And I think he would be adverse to, say, overturning Roe versus Wade, for instance, because I think he thinks that's settled law. Yeah, we'll have to see about that. But anyway, it depends on how the issue is argued. But the idea is that he might be seeing this in more grander issues, like, do we really want to decide a Roe versus Wade kind of issue here, mm-hmm. or should we be more balanced?
But keep in mind, that's
the only
distinction for him is only going to last for certainly not the remainder of the Trump time in office, because not to put this bad energy out there, Ruth Bader Ginsburg is dealing with some significant health issues. That there seems to be growing a concern on the left that she's not going to be around to the end of the 2020 term.
I don't think it's growing. We've always had that concern.
It does seem like there's a lot more coming up there.
So the president is presumably
And the president is presumably going to fill that with another person like a Gorsuch or a Kavanaugh. And so it doesn't really matter at that point whether Justice Roberts wants to side with, you know, tradition and precedent.
Well, it might explain his vote. In other words, that would allow
his current vote.
If we got another conservative on the thing, he can balance, justify the philosophy on the other side or go which way. We don't have a lot of time. Do you want to try to squeeze in the Delta passenger story? You seem to like this story. So Delta is in, I don't know, some hot water.
There's no hot water.
There's enough hot water for them to change the policy and stand down. But basically,
So they have a partnership with Coke,
yes,
right? And they allow for Coke to put some advertisements on the little cocktail napkins that you get when you get a drink. On one of the cocktail napkins that they were putting out there, it was encouraging people to write their name and put their number down and then slip it to another passenger who they were sexually attracted to.
On your flight crush, they call it.
Yeah, they call it flight crush. It's a goofy,
yes,
silly thing that I can't imagine anyone actually did this. Okay, no one filled out their name and put out their phone number.
Apparently they did because of course he's lying because he's a Republican. Did you hear? Mike Huckabee says, wow, I love that. I got 9 people wanting to contact me. I know I'm an attractive older gentleman, but still,
Is he still doing the dad jokes?
He is indeed. He's cited in the story.
Well,
anyway,
a few people called it creepy, then Delta came out because, you know, they don't want to have to deal with any of this stuff, especially on something so insignificant like a cocktail napkin. They said, okay, we inadvertently put people in weird positions.
Unintentionally creepy. Yeah.
It's not creepy.
You don't think it's creepy at all? Yes. I found, to me, when I saw that, I thought it was kind of funny. It was kind of clever because you didn't expect people to actually act on it. But if they did, it might be seen as a little creepy.
It's only creepy if you're not interested in the person who's giving you their phone number.
I know, but
it's the only time it's creepy.
How would you know? And the key
they
is
give it to you.
Yeah, that's a little awkward. You don't have to want to deal with it. So I'm just saying this. I think as a guy, I'm less bothered by this, but I've got 2 beautiful daughters, and they explained to me, Dad, that they get hit on all the time, okay? And so if you're on a plane and you just want to get someplace and somebody is kind of, it's like they might not be open to that, and because
of
that,
way of their
it's
love
a
life.
Little, no, believe me, they're explaining why we ought to get rid of our napkins. That's what's getting in the way of their love life.
No one uses the napkins anyway. You just pull it up and put it back in the stupid cup. You're listening to the Tom and Curly Show. I'm Jason Rantz. I'm filling in for John Curly as he's out. When we come back, that Instacart story where they were complaining that the tips weren't actually going directly to them in addition to the money they were supposed to be made. Apparently, that controversy is now extending out to Amazon. Is it a legit controversy, or is it a bunch of people who are just complaining about what they're currently making? We'll try to figure this out when we come back on Kyle
Radio. I'm against it. This hour of the Tom and Curly Show is brought to you by Laura's Home Loans. Is that correct? Hey, it just flashed off my screen. You are listening to the Tom and Curly Show. John is away today. I'm Tom Tangney. John's away doing a big pre-Grammy auction tonight down in L.A., so he will be back on Monday. But we're lucky to have Jason Rantz from KTTH filling in.
Whose name you wrote down on a sheet of paper as if you're not going to remember my name.
Not your name. I forget to introduce people, and I think it's important. I'm always reminded, says, hey, you don't say who's your fill-in. So it was a reminder for that. But if you don't want me to mention your name, that's fine, Mr. Anonymous. So the story we're going to look at now, we talked a bit about this earlier in the week. The gig economy is sort of this new economic branch of American society, but there are some wrinkles that still need to be ironed out, and one of them involves tips. There's a story about Instacart. Also, this is DoorDash has been accused of it. This is Cairo 7's Didi Sun reporting on Instacart's weird tipping system. We're going to talk about how typical this is of the gig economy, and is it a reason for concern?
We followed Instacart shopper Ashley Knutson as she shopped for a customer's order in Tacoma.
We're gonna go down the credit.
She says the problem is she's getting paid less for the work.
The decrease in our wages at least 30%, It's just not fair.
Several workers tell me it started a couple of months ago when Instacart changed its system of how they pay shoppers who are contract employees.
We can see how they're using the customer's tips to pay us less.
She says Instacart is supposed to pay shoppers at least $10 for each shopping trip and showed us these screenshots from a recent job. She earned about $12.50, but about $7.50 of that came from a customer's tip.
Because this customer decided to tip $7.46, their Instacart is going to pay us $5.02 for that order.
Working Washington, a workers' rights group, shared an even more egregious example on its website. It shows without this $10 customer tip, an employee earned only 80 cents for more than an hour of work.
The expectation when you're tipping somebody is that that worker is getting the tip, not the company.
Working Washington says because they are contract employees, the legality is unclear.
That is a little hazy. We're looking into it, I think, probably. A lot of people are probably looking into it, I think, because it's pretty galling. It certainly seems like something that you see it and you're like, that should be illegal.
The problem has Instacart shoppers
frustrated.
They're banding together, encouraging customers to send a message to Instacart by tipping just 22 cents, a number you can add to after that transaction to make sure the shopper gets the tip.
Okay, so anyway, that came out, I think, late last week. And the idea is that that does feel a little cheap. Most of us, when we tip, we assume that we're tipping the individual specifically. We're not tipping the company that's providing the service. And I do think that's a little cheap if that's the policy. And Instacart, I think, recognized that they had a PR problem on their hands. And they immediately said, yeah, I think in hindsight, we should change that. And that's a good thing. I assume, are you cool with that? Do you think that is?
And if they choose to do that, it's them. I think part of this is, to your point of, this sort of being a new portion of the economy is that we made certain assumptions as to where the tip goes, and that's kind of on us, right? I mean, if this was clearly the behind the scenes deal so that people can make up to $18 or $20 or whatever it is, which is way higher than what they would normally make for a job like this.
Instacart is $10 though. We're about to talk about Amazon.
We're talking about in a general sense. I mean, you should remember the tipping in Uber, for example. That started about a year and a half, 2 years ago. You weren't always tipping. Tipping, general, you're not guaranteed a tip, period. And so when you are getting this tip, what they're saying likely behind the scenes is, look, we're trying to attract these new workers to come into our services because it's a new part of the economy. We don't yet know what the supply and demand offering is going to be. So we raise the potential rate that we would be willing to pay someone to do this job. We're going to dip into the tips in order to pay that because otherwise we probably couldn't sustain this high of a hourly wage.
First off, though, that's deceptive because they didn't tell the drivers that was going to happen. So that's one of the problems. If they were more above board, but then they also ought to let the customers know. The only reason you can tip your Uber drivers now is because Lyft drivers were getting it and people said, wait a minute, why can't I tip? If I like my Uber driver, why should I be able to tip them? And then the idea is if that tip came out of what they were getting paid, that doesn't seem very fair. And that's our understanding of tips. Now, it is true that the gig economy has changed our perceptions of the way work works in a lot of ways.
How is it different than a wage staff? For example, in certain states, and it depends on where you're going, you don't have to pay the same minimum wage because it is going to get subsidized in some way by individual tips. So it seems like they're following a similar model. Not the same, but a similar model.
And the thing is, I think it's just, it seems deceptive because those of us who tip feel like we think we know where the tip's going and it's not. And the thing is, so I thought it was basically isolated to Instacart and DoorDash. And then it turns out that we have a story today that says this is happening to Amazon. Now, these are not Amazon employees. They're contracted employees. They're contracted delivery drivers. And they have the same kind of thing. They're guaranteed $18 to $25 an hour. And when the tip is allowed, when they don't have enough money or when they don't give enough money, they use the take out of their tip to compensate. The same kind of thing. It's pretty outrageous, I think. Although, as the guy in the DD Sun report said, we don't know that it's illegal.
It's not illegal. It's not illegal. And by the way, just for context, the individual you're referring to is the head of Working Washington, which is a labor union front group.
Absolutely. No,
I'm just saying, let's at least give that context.
Well, no, I mean, that
because they've been going after Amazon. They've been going after these types of companies for a while.
They found an issue, I think, where even people that don't like unions would agree. Wait, if I'm personally tipping, I took Lyft in today. I personally tipped my Lyft guy. If I thought that that's only helping Lyft and not the driver.
But it is helping the driver, because if not, here's how I would argue it.
Okay,
the unintended consequence of going after something like this could potentially be, okay, well, we're no longer going to guarantee you $18 or 20, whatever it is,
that's
an hour.
$18 to $25.
We're going to bring that down. And we think after you get your tip, you might be able to get to $18. We're guaranteeing you $18 an hour. You take the tip subsidy out of that, then maybe they only guarantee you in Seattle $15 or in Bellevue $11.
But what they have to do is they have to be upfront about it. And I think most people, well, then they say, you know what we're doing with tips then? Now we're just going to tip. You have to have cash, though. Not everybody has cash.
Well, it's not clear if Amazon, but it's not clear if Amazon has not expressly made that policy clear to the drivers. Because they weren't really participating in giving comments to the Seattle Times story that we're pulling, or the LA Times story where we're pulling this from.
No, yes.
So I think if Instacart said to the employees, you, in addition to making $10 an hour, you, or whatever it is, you will also get 100% of the tips, then I'm on your side. They have to honor that. If that wasn't they expressly told these people, then that's different.
And maybe it needs to be negotiated in some ways. But no, what's interesting about Amazon is Amazon refuses to say anything about their business. And so it
Which they generally don't comment on things
that's
like
right.
this.
That's right. I mean, I understand. That's their policy. But in other words, so it took five enterprising drivers to figure this out. What they did is...
Enterprising drivers.
No, because what they did is they ended up ordering something from Amazon. They were then contracted to go pick it up. Mm-hmm. They tipped themselves $12.50, and they realized that $12.50 was taken out of their $18 guarantee. So that what that did was that just established that that's the policy, because Amazon wouldn't even admit to... They wouldn't even fess up to it. So Amazon, unlike Instacart, doesn't have to change its ways, because they are running the world right now. But I do think this is the kind of PR stuff that Jeff Bezos might not be thrilled
with. If he doesn't change his ways, I'm releasing some photos. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, I figured you had some connection with David Pecker.
You're listening to the Tom and Curly Show. I'm Jason Ransom, filling in for John Curly. When we come back, if you're kind of bored by some of these announcements you're getting from your schools that it's a snow day, we're going to just leave a little bit early. Well, some places around the country are doing it way better than we are here in Western Washington. We'll get into some of those ways. When we come back, you're listening to Cairo Radio.
Welcome back to the Tom and Curly Show. Tom Tangney here. Jason Rance filling in for the John Curly Master of Ceremonies. He's down in L.A. doing the pre-Grammy auction. Make sure you text the online Trading Academy text line at 98973. That's 98973. Or hit us up on the MyNorthWest.com inbox for your take on the issues of the day, snow and the Supreme Court and anything else. Speaking of snow, I love this next story just because it's got some great sound to it. Apparently, announcing a snow day, and you do this on social media, it's not like you're in one of those old schoolyards we're used to seeing in the movies from the 50s where over the loudspeaker comes the principal. These kinds of announcements come on social media, on Twitter, all these kinds of things. But you now have very energetic and ambitious and maybe even artistic principals making various announcements. So we have some samples. Wall Street Journal does a nice job of talking about how...
Went there, right? Artistic.
You're just
leaning into that assumption.
Ice day. Schools setting snow day announcements to music. And so we have a couple of nice examples. This guy, right off the bat, his name is Josh Gignac. He's principal of Johnson Elementary in Milford, Michigan, singing a parody of Ice, Ice Baby by Vanilla Ice.
Let's go. We got it. Ice, ice day, yo. All right, stop. Because in a minute you'll be bouncing off the walls when you hear this announcement. Something that we never take lightly. They call
already
it our school when it's cold and it's icy. Will it ever stop, yo? We don't know. We just want to go and see our Jaguars grow. But when it's extreme, we got to think about the wind chill. 30 below could freeze the lead in your pencil. Dance.
Lead in your pencil.
Did he, in addition to performing, write the lyrics?
Yes, he did it all.
Oh, wow.
He performed it all.
Renaissance man.
It took him about 10 different tries. You know, he said, oh, I got it in there, because he does it from home. The
seems
dog
like
starts
efficient
barking.
Use of school resources.
Now, the thing is, this is the kind of stuff that would bomb at the high school level. Middle school level, maybe. This is an elementary school. I think an elementary school kid would think this is the greatest.
But is it for the kids or is it for the parents? Because the parents are the one who presumably are getting
That's
these messages. And I just think from a perspective, and parents can certainly weigh in at 99.73. Don't you kind of just want to get the information rather than have to sift through a 3.5 minute rap by some corny PE teacher?
It was 20. He was the principal, not a PE teacher. And it was 21 nonsense. Seconds, not 3 minutes.
Well, we played 21 seconds of the clip. But don't you kind of just want to lead with the pertinent information?
I'm against it. So anyway, I think it's a very clever way. Again, you have to know your audience. I didn't think about that as this elementary school parent, but I think if you're an elementary school parent, that, well, no, the kids, are you kidding? This kid, all those kids are going
to
line up watching.
How old is an elementary school kid on average?
Up to sixth grade.
Do I have to go to school today? No? Awesome, cool. I don't need you to wrap.
Hey, did you see what Principal Gignac did? Okay, well, anyway, if you didn't like that one, Jason, you're going to even love this one less. This is Swatch Creek Superintendent Ben Manka and Principal. So this is a superintendent and a principal ganging up to perform a Hallelujah parody.
It goes like this when the
snow is offensive,
hits,
right?
The buses can't get out of it. It's cold and it's a snowy winter morning.
I love this.
It's a snow day, a winter cold day. Stay home and just play. It's a great family day.
Oh, man, you are a sourpuss, Jason Rance.
Well, the other thing that I immediately think of, wow, it's going to be really embarrassing and wrong if someone dies because of the snow that day, and then they can go back and listen, play this on the news.
Yeah, wishful thinking on your part. You're a terrible human being, Jason Rance. So anyway, we got one more. Now, this is the one I think was the least effective, mm-hmm. so I left it to last, but you might like it the best. Missouri Valley Principal Brent Hosig's version of Uptown Funk.
It's here, that ice cold, that winter storm, that white snow. This calls for them good girls, them good boys for school today. Calling, texting, sending it out through Mount Valley. Well, on Tuesday, at home you'll stay after listening to my ditty. And we're closed Tuesday, till the roads are cleared by the snowfall man. And we're closed
Tuesday. I got it.
Okay, so you had a vote out of those three. Which one would you vote for? I think you're starting to warm up to.
I've never been more proud that I don't have kids.
All right, stop. Because in a minute, you'll
stop.
Be bouncing off the walls when you hear this
Okay, so
something.
I guess that means that Hallelujah takes the day.
I prefer just simply saying, there's no school today, guys. Stay home.
You're no fun. Thank God you're nowhere near elementary schools, middle schools, or high schools then.
We
Jason
paid for
Rance.
That. The taxpayers paid for that, ladies and gentlemen. They're always constantly complaining. We want more money.
Okay, enough already.
It's Tom and Curly Show. I'm Jason Rance. I'm filling in. You can normally hear me weekdays from 3 to 6 on KTTH. When we come back, Jeff Bezos has some pictures out there, and he's owning it. We'll tell you why when we come back.